Chapter 3, The Remote Camps, and A Detour to the Past. While in the past 5 years, there had been frequent visitors from the outside world to the two main Mohammedpur and Mirpur camps, and some limited aid from the Saudi-based World Muslim League, some from Iran, and a few other sources, we were the first outside visitors to the remote camps. Irani Camp. This is one of the small camps on the outskirts of the Dhaka city limits. We arrived at a scene of devastation. A fire had raged through the camp during the cyclone. 16 huts stood blackened in the bright afternoon sun. Another 32 were partially burned or had been blown down by the relentless wrath of nature. In one hut, they were trying to scrape up the bodies of 4 babies who had fused together in a charred mass. The surviving victims of burns huddled in agony in different huts. The Bangladesh Red Crescent, charged with administering all the camps, did not send a representative to inspect the damage, bring medical care to the burn victims, or replace the rations lost in the fire. A woman, not in the usual sari, but wearing a guara, the traditional dress of the UP, a province in northern India, came and handed me an envelope. "Could you carry this letter to my son in Orangitown?" she requested. Placing the letter in the camera bag, I thought of all the divided families, some illegally in Pakistan, the rest marooned in the camps. This woman, whose name, Mrs. Sajjad Hussain, was written on the envelope, handed me a glass of brackish water. "I have nothing else to offer you," she said, pointing to the ruin of her partially burned hut. That gesture of hospitality made me decide to risk drinking it. Then she took my arm, and we walked to a high point at the rear edge of the camp. Below was a river with a barren shore on the side nearest the camp. The shore on the other side was lush and green jungle. "This fire was caused by the cyclone winds," she began, "but we have had 14 fires that were deliberately set, that have burned the entire camp to the ground. A fire for each year we've been here. Always on Ashura. For us, this place is Karbala, and every day is Ashura." Ashura, the 10th day of the Muslim month of Muharram, is a sacred day of mourning for Shia Muslims in particular. It was because of the large Shia population that Irani Camp got its name. While other camps have an estimated Shia population of 10 to 25%, many Shias who came to Pakistan from India had settled together in the Murapara district of Dhaka. The remoteness of this camp and its smaller numbers, in turn, also leaves it more vulnerable to attack by both the local Bengali populace, police, and even the military. And so far, Irani Camp held the record for the most deliberately set fires. Murapara Camp, Section 12. We went to the next camp over. In one of the huts, a man was lying on the floor with his family gathered around him. The wife of the gravely ill man made a place for me to sit. "Papa had a fever," explained the oldest son, who appeared to be around 18. "Then last week he got sicker." The man's bare midsection was swollen, and a large patch of puffy black flesh was visibly spread across his abdomen, an indication that he was unable to pass urine, and that gangrene had set in. He was comatose, and while his midsection was bloated, his face and limbs were emaciated. "My father's name is Khaliluddin. Please write down his name and take a picture of him. Give it to Zia-ul-Haq and tell him my father suffered and died for Pakistan." He was right that his father was doomed. It took 15 more days for Khaliluddin to die, and though later we made concerted attempts to get medical treatment for him and others we found in dire need, we could get no doctor to come or find one hospital that would admit them. The only response was, "We don't treat Biharis." Several huts away, there was a 13-year-old girl, so malnourished she was the size of an average 7-year-old. She was too weak to lift her head off the floor where she lay. Entering another hut, there were a dozen elderly women sprawled on the hard floor. These women had no family to look after them anymore, so the duty for caring for them was shared by many in the camp. As we were leaving the Murapara camps, we came across a little girl sitting outside a hut making garlands of paper flowers. This was one of the few sources for income in the smaller, remote camps. "Can you sell a garland to me?" I asked. She thought about it, then nodded. "How much?" 5 takas, she said after a long pause. I took out a 10-taka note, worth about 15 cents U.S., and handed it to her. She looked the bill over carefully. "I don't have change." "It's all right. Keep the change." I was told later that she probably earned no more than 5 takas for the entire consignment of garlands. She gave me an indignant look. "For 10 takas, take 2, because I'm not a beggar." After that lesson in the Bihari work ethic and sense of dignity, we moved on. As we walked between the camps, we paused to watch preparations for a wedding that was to take place that evening. Illness, death, fire, juxtaposed with a wedding. Adamji Nagar Camp. What struck me most about this and all